People with symptoms of the deadly virus are treated outdoors.
And that is posing a major challenge in India's battle with COVID. It's Wednesday, May 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. says it will share millions more COVID-19 vaccines with the world. COVID sets back the battle against tropical disease. The effort to fund Rohingya camps in Bangladesh needs help. The fear of Asian students studying in the United States. And the latest in health monitoring technology could be the clothes you wear. It is all on today's VOA Asia. In India, the healthcare crisis triggered by the ferocious second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic is shifting from the big cities to small towns and villages. Combating the spread in rural areas where two-thirds of the country lives, health experts say has emerged as India's new challenge. From Mumbai, Anjana Pasricha has this report.
Relatives try to help loved ones suffering from COVID-19. At a hospital in a small town in North India. In a village, people with symptoms of the deadly virus are treated outdoors because residents said they had no option of accessing health facilities.
When people go to a hospital, they hear that there are no beds, there is no treatment available, and there are no doctors or healthcare workers. When they go to private hospitals or doctors' clinics, they get just a prescription for medicines. Patients are helpless.
In villages, grieving families tell stories of how they are losing loved ones to the virus. As the pandemic's second wave rages in rural India, after slowing down in big cities such as New Delhi. Prime Minister Narendra Modi has sounded a grim warning.
This infection is now spreading to villages very rapidly. All governments of the country are trying everything to stop this. The awareness of people in the villages and the cooperation of the village governing bodies is just as important in controlling this spread.
The government says it will increase the number of hospital beds with oxygen support in rural districts, which usually have ill-equipped health centers. But the challenge is in meeting the demands. Even in big cities, modern hospitals, isolation and testing centers were overwhelmed and oxygen supplies ran short. Such facilities are sparse in rural areas.
You may have some in the semi-urban areas, but nothing close to what you're having in metros in terms of sophistication, both in infrastructure as well as in skills and capacity to be able to deal with the virus. I mean, even if you have oxygen concentrators and oxygen there, people should know how to use that. And unfortunately, capacity building has not happened to that extent.
Villages will also be hit hardest by a shortage of vaccines that has hobbled the country's inoculation drive. While older people can get a jab at health centers, India has mandated that adults under 45 must register on an app-based technology. But many rural residents do not have smartphones or internet access.
Imagine what will happen with people in rural areas who, as it is, do not have the full awareness of and the benefit of knowing day-to-day changes in COVID protocols that we are being subjected to.
Health experts say a slow pace of inoculating the countryside, where two-thirds of the country lives, will make it harder to counter the fury of India's second wave. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Mumbai.
In addition, India is now facing a meteorological challenge as a cyclone on India's west coast has killed at least 19 people and damaged infrastructure and agriculture, while heavy rains continue to lash some regions on Tuesday. Reuters' Flora Bradley Watson has more.
A powerful cyclone has left a trail of destruction along the northwestern coast of India. Packing winds of 130 miles per hour, Cyclone Tauktae made landfall late on Monday, uprooting trees and electricity lines. Authorities are now concerned about the steady supply of oxygen to hospitals overwhelmed by COVID-19. The storm has hampered India's fight against the disease. Ahead of Tauktae's arrival, hundreds of thousands of people had to be evacuated from coastal areas in the state of Gujarat. Vaccinations were suspended for 2 days, while hospitals awaited backup generators to keep power running. The cyclone weakened after it made landfall, but at least a dozen people have already died in the storm. The Indian Navy said it had rescued 146 people from one of two barges that were adrift near the Mumbai coastline. In Gujarat, no damages have been reported at the refineries and seaports that were expected to be in the storm's path. The country's biggest private port was able to open on Tuesday. The cyclone was the most powerful one to hit India in more than two decades.
That was Flora Bradley Watson reporting. Find out more by checking our website at voanews.com as well as all of our social media platforms. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. China offers to host the Afghan peace talks. Japanese medical group calls for cancellation of Tokyo Olympics. Bangladesh arrests journalists known for unearthing graft. More than 15,000 people from Myanmar shelter in the Indian border state. Vietnam shuts industrial parks housing Foxconn plants after COVID-19 outbreak. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. As vaccine demand drops at home, the Biden administration says it will share more COVID-19 vaccines with the world. Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The U.S. had already pledged to ship 60 million AstraZeneca doses overseas once federal regulators clear them for use. Now, President Biden says 20 million doses of the three vaccines that are approved will be shared for the first time.
We need to help fight the disease around the world to keep us safe here at home and to do the right thing of helping other people.
He's been under growing international pressure to share doses, even as fewer Americans seek the shots domestically. More than 123 million people here are now fully vaccinated. More than 157 million have received at least one dose. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Expatriate Indian doctors in Australia have formed an emergency group to help overwhelmed colleagues and relatives struggling with COVID-19 back home. Also in Australia, a special task force is urging the government to abandon what some have termed a fortress approach to the pandemic due to the country's decision to keep international borders shut. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Settlers from India are Australia's second largest group of migrants behind those from England. They've become a valuable part of society and the economy. Now expatriate medical professionals from India have come together to help their colleagues back home during the pandemic. The Indian health system has been under immense strain because of an avalanche of COVID-19 infections and fatalities. The populous South Asian nation is at the heart of the global pandemic. The World Health Organization has reported 25 million infections and more than 270,000 virus-related deaths. Indian migrant doctors in Australia are dispensing medical advice through phone lines and via the internet about hospital treatment and drugs to help patients in India fend off coronavirus infections. Yardu Singh is a cardiologist in Sydney and president of the Federation of Indian Associations of New South Wales State. He says they're doing what they can to help anxious patients in India.
We became the secondary doctors. We can't prescribe medicine sitting in Sydney, but we were able to counsel them, stop them from getting panic, and also to counsel them about what they should do to not pass on the infection.
Australia's response to the pandemic has received global praise, but an alliance of education, migration and legal experts has said the nation risks being left behind if its isolationist approach to COVID-19 continues. Australia banned foreign nationals in March 2020 to curb the spread of the virus and the government says international borders won't reopen until the middle of 2022. Critics, however, believe that Australia's prosperity relies on rejoining an open, globalised world. But Prime Minister Scott Morrison said not even mass vaccinations would allow Australia to reopen its borders sooner than he's planned.
Even in that circumstance, you're still talking about many Australians, millions of Australians, who wouldn't have been vaccinated because A, they're children, or B, they've chosen not to be. And you're also making assumptions about what the rest of the world looks like with COVID at the end of this year, the introduction of new variants and strains.
Almost 30,000 coronavirus infections have been diagnosed in Australia since the pandemic began, and 910 people have died, according to the latest government figures. Australian citizens and permanent residents are allowed to return home, but numbers are limited because of capacity constraints in the mandatory hotel quarantine system. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Ahead on VOA Asia, COVID hampers the fight against tropical disease. Stay with us. Happening now in Asia, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte bars his cabinet from talking about the South China Sea in public, but said the gag order does not mean the country was wavering in its defense of its sovereign rights. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. The World Health Organization reports the COVID-19 pandemic has set back years of gains made in efforts to eliminate neglected tropical diseases, a diverse group of 20 illnesses that disproportionately affect impoverished communities in tropical areas. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Neglected tropical diseases affect 1.7 billion people globally. 40% are in Africa, a continent that encompasses most of the 10 high-burden countries in the world. Over the past decade, the World Health Organization reports great progress has been made in the treatment of many of these life-threatening and debilitating diseases. It notes 42 countries around the world have eliminated at least one disease. However, Mwelechele Malichela, director of WHO's Department of Control of Neglected Tropical Diseases, says she fears a lot of this good work could be undone because of the negative impact of COVID-19. She says the pandemic has caused disruptions and delays in NTD services. She says mass treatment campaigns, surveys of affected areas, and the transport and delivery of medicines have been interrupted.
All the efforts that have been done to control these neglected tropical diseases to bring about elimination in most in some of the countries will be reversed if the focus is not kept, a good focus on surveillance, a good focus on continued interventions in some of the countries which are nearing elimination.
WHO reports guinea worm disease is on the cusp of eradication, with only 27 human cases reported in six African countries last year. In 1986, about 3.5 million human cases occurred annually in 21 countries in Africa and Asia. WHO says yaws, a chronic skin infection, is a disease that can be eradicated in the Indian subcontinent. Malichela cites several other success stories.
In terms of elimination of trachoma, we have Morocco, we have Ghana, and more recently we have Gambia. We have the elimination of lymphatic filariasis in Togo and in Malawi. In Yemen, which is, you know, outside Africa in the Middle East, they have eliminated lymphatic filariasis under very difficult conditions, but they've managed to do it. And that's, you know, very impressive feat.
At the end of January, WHO formally launched a new roadmap aimed at driving progress toward a world free of NTDs by 2030. Health officials consider the roadmap a key piece in ensuring countries build back better after COVID-19 by focusing on resilience and strengthening health systems. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ahead on VOA Asia, the Rohingya in Bangladesh need more help.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China is resisting bilateral talks with the United States on nuclear weapons, the U.S. disarmament ambassador told a U.N. conference Tuesday, as Washington seeks to advance efforts to reduce nuclear arms stockpiles. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. An appeal for nearly $1 billion to help Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh is more than a third funded. The head of the UN Refugee Agency said that Tuesday. Filippo Grandi told a news conference in Geneva that donors had so far pledged $340 million for the 2021 program, meaning it's currently 36% funded.
In terms of the results of this morning's conference, remember, $943 million requested. There were $206 million in fresh contributions, but we should note that $134 million had already been contributed before this event, which means that up to now, $340 million, meaning 36% of this plan, have been funded.
Speaking at the same event, International Organization for Migration Director General Antonio Vitorino said he understands the fatigue of the host communities, but improving refugees' living conditions will also benefit them.
We understand a certain fatigue in the host communities, but we are determined to show that improving the living conditions of the refugees can represent also a positive contribution to the region of Cox's Bazar as a whole, to the benefit of the host communities themselves, and also to minimize the negative impacts, especially, as Filippo has mentioned, in terms of the inevitable environmental impact of the presence of such a large number of people living in very difficult circumstances.
Vitorino added that COVID outbreaks in the Rohingya camps have so far been successfully contained, although vaccines were urgently needed. Making headlines in Asia, Pakistani police said Tuesday they have foiled an attempt by a mob to lynch a blasphemy suspect recently arrested on charges of insulting Islam. The mob stormed a police station on the outskirts of Islamabad Monday night after police refused to hand over the suspect to the crowd outside. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the rate of anti-Asian hate crime has soared in the United States since the coronavirus pandemic started in early 2020. International students in the U.S. report isolated incidents. Kathleen Strzok has this report.
Most international students in the U.S. are students of color. Amid the pandemic, which started in China, anti-Asian hate crime has spiked 150% nationwide, according to police data. Since March 2020, Stop AAPI Hate, a group that monitors racism against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, says it received more than 6,000 reports of hate incidents. Columbia University student June Bake says he came to the U.S. in 2015 from South Korea because of the quality of education.
America offers the best universities, the most renowned ones, and I felt that like going to America, studying there, would open up new opportunities than I would have had if I were to study back in Korea.
While riding the subway last year, he heard a woman begin to shout. That's not unusual in New York City. But he realized it was directed at him.
I tried to not say anything, just look down, just mind my own business. But it got worse and worse. And it became more, it wasn't just any kind of verbal assault. I realized that it was actually directed at me. And I decided to just get off at the next station.
Shootings in March near Atlanta, Georgia, left 8 people dead, including 6 Asian women. While the suspect said his motives were not racial, Asians in the U.S. said the incident has increased their fears.
It's really sad because I have to avoid going out in the dark. I have to avoid certain streets which are dark. I have to always be very cautious and very aware of my Asian identity.
All the students VOA talked with said they generally feel comfortable on campus and among America's diverse urban populations. They say the experience of living in a multicultural society has been a great lesson.
It's been an amazing journey, especially when I look back. I really got to see so many different cultures coming together and most importantly meet friends from different countries, different cultures, and get to know their stories. Really expanded my mind, and I appreciate this kind of freedom for me to explore the world.
But just having Asian features creates anxiety lately.
When I was watching the recent news, I definitely feel really sad to see those attacks happening not only in New York City but also in other cities as well. And I feel a little bit like unsafe when I'm in this kind of situation. I'm lucky because I've been receiving a lot of love and support.
While reports of hate crimes overall decreased 7% last year, likely because of lockdowns, reports of hate crimes against Asians rose nearly 150% in 16 of the largest U.S. cities, according to police data.
You guys suck, go back to your country while you're here in the U.S., and that's pretty much it. But, like, it's been rare one-off occasions, nothing that would make me feel unsafe, Esper. But, I mean, it still sucks when it does happen.
Kathleen Strzok, VOA News, New York.
More from VOA Asia, from earbuds that measure blood pressure to clothing that monitors your heart rate. The latest in health monitoring technology is being included in everyday items like clothing, rings, and glasses. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details from Los Angeles.
Wearable devices no longer just count steps. Imagine eyeglasses that also take your blood pressure. The U.S.-based company Valencell is developing blood pressure detecting sensors that can be placed in everyday wearable objects.
Photoplethysmography, PPG, is a method of determining volumetric changes in blood flow and blood vessels within your body using light that's scattered from your body.
Instead of an inconvenient cuff like this, Valencell sensors can be placed in earbuds, wristwatches, and even in rings to passively take a user's blood pressure throughout the day. It will help users catch what is known as the silent killer, because high blood pressure often has no symptoms but can lead to heart disease. Taiwan's Industrial Technology Research Institute, or ITRI, and Eclat Textiles have developed clothing called iSmartWear. The conductive fabric measures heart and respiratory rates through antennae that are printed and embedded into loose-fitting clothing.
Conventionally, the device has to be embedded in the clothes and it has to be tight, because it has to be contact to the body of the user. But in our device, it is a non-contact mode sensing, so the user can be more comfortable.
iSmartWear allows doctors to monitor a patient remotely on a mobile device. For infants, ITRI's iDarlingWear device aims to prevent sudden infant death syndrome and accidental suffocation. Placed in the swaddling clothes, the device monitors the baby's heartbeat, breathing, and activity level. An alarm goes off on the parent's smartphone when the device detects irregularities.
It transmits a very low power microwave signal to the human body.
New wearable devices where technology is woven into everyday objects. Available in the near future. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.